Welcome to the Liberated Body Podcast, helping you to more happily inhabit your body with your host, Brooke Thomas.
Hello, and welcome to episode 19 of the Liberated Body Podcast. This is Brooke, and today I'm talking with Constance Claire Newman, who is a teacher of the Alexander Technique. So a lot of what I'm doing here at Liberated Body, a lot of my goal is to be an advocate for the many, many, many fields that live under this large umbrella that we can kind of generally call manual and movement therapies, or some people have called it spatial medicine. But there's a really wide variety of fields that live under that umbrella. And I'm hoping to have podcasts where we can learn all kinds of fascinating, nuanced things about our bodies, but also as an audio encyclopedia of sorts so that people can check out different modalities and learn about them. Really, there are so many people I want to talk to and so many things I want to talk about that I swear I could do a daily podcast if only there were some magical wand to grant me the time and energy. So in any case, in terms of highlighting somebody special doing work in a particular field of the manual movement therapies, today I get to talk with Constance Claire Newman about, as I mentioned, Alexander Technique. It is one of the methods that I have been a huge advocate of for years now. I've used it a lot in my own body. I refer my clients out to it a bunch, and I just think that it's really something special. So I was very grateful to talk with Constance about it. She is certified by the American Society for the Alexander Technique and has been teaching since about 2001, and her private practice is in Cape Cod in Massachusetts. So we talk about, of course, you know, what Alexander Technique is, but we also get into a lot of juicy goodies about the differences between undoing versus doing in terms of cues that are going to help us further down the road of feeling good inside of these body things that we, you know, have to spend every minute of our lives inside of, so we might as well make friends with it. We get into tensegrity concepts and how one can learn to actually, sort of, to me, feels kind of like trust falling into your own inherent support versus like propping yourself up. The relationships within our body and Alexander's particular interest in looking at the ideal relationship between the head and neck and back. And we also talk about sex because, hey, why not? So we talk about what makes for good sex versus meh sex. So obviously we're talking a bunch about quality of touch and receptivity to touch. So this also earns us our first explicit rating on iTunes, but that's really because of their stringent standards. I wouldn't say that it's explicit. However, if you have little ears around while you're listening, you might want to pop in some headphones for this episode. Before we get into it, just a brief reminder, this isn't medical advice, it shouldn't be used that way, and I'll be back at the end to wrap it up and to get into some home play to tinker with in your regular non-podcast listening life. So without further ado, here is Constance. So thank you so much, Constance, for talking with all of us today.
Thank you for asking me.
So you are a teacher of Alexander Technique. So can we kick this off by you describing what that is?
Sure. Well, Alexander can be many things to many people. So it's often described emphasizing one thing over another, like it's about movement, or it's about performance anxiety, or it's about personal growth. I like to describe it as a practice of mindfulness that begins with the body. It's about consciously embodying and making choices. I also describe it as a practice of neuroplasticity applied to everyday life. And that includes movement, posture, breath, voice, expression, energy, thought, emotion, gesture, sensation. And I list all these things together because all those things together and more are what we make up ourself. And the Alexander work is really about exploring an undivided self in which all of these things are not separated.
Beautiful.
We talk a lot about mind-body these days, and when we do, we're using that dualistic paradigm, and that's really not how the organism is set up to work.
Meaning it's body or it's mind.
Right.
Yeah.
In reality, in lessons, people usually come for pain relief or a movement issue. So we start there. Every now and then I have a student who may have read F.M. Alexander, the founder. They have read a book and they're curious about the personal growth potential. But the majority of our students, I think, come for pain relief because they've heard it's about posture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, a couple of points. I want to get back to the pain relief one in a bit, but I also wanted to loop back because you mentioned neuroplasticity, and that's a word that I think a lot of people are pretty familiar with now, but some people may not be, and they may not be familiar with how, like what you mean by how Alexander technique is a form of addressing your own neuroplasticity. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. So when we have a habit, the grooves that make that habit in the brain, that is the neurons that fire together, have been used to firing together a lot. And to change a habit, we either throw a lot of other stuff on, a lot of other neurons and other pathways on top of that, or we undo some of those neurons. So that when they're not firing together, you're separating and you're inhibiting rather than adding stuff on. So that's why we often talk about Alexander technique as being an unlearning or an undoing or a relearning, coming back to a dynamic neutral instead of a adding new things on top
mm-hmm.
of old patterns. And ultimately, the Alexander work, as many different practices are, it's about changing your habits for what works better for you in your life. So whether those habits are movement habits or postural habits or habits of thinking, habits of reactions to people, places, and things in the world that one doesn't want anymore, that are not useful anymore. All those things are things that we work with in the principles of the technique.
Mm. So getting rid of many of the habits that do not serve us and,
exactly.
and that we don't even realize are not serving us.
Right. Yes. And a lot of times people come in and they say, I have this pain or I have this stress, and they don't actually realize what habits are not, are creating that, helping to create that or fostering that, you know, going more towards that problem. And so they don't realize what they can let go of until somebody helps them out of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the pain issue you touched on, because a lot of people do come to Alexander technique for pain. And certainly there's, as you mentioned, much wider range of benefits that people can get. But there has been some good data on Alexander technique actually helping people with pain, I think in particular back pain as well.
Yeah, the British Medical Society, the British Medical Journal, did a great study a few years ago that was really clear in lessons in the Alexander technique as opposed to the typical, I think it was massage. Maybe there was physical therapy in there too. But the difference between Alexander and the other and therapies is that Alexander's an education thing. So if you're taking lessons and you take 10 lessons and then in a year you're kind of reassessed, hopefully you've been able to keep that practice going and you've learned something that stays with you through your life. Whereas if you have a treatment of a massage or chiropractic or something, a lot of times that can really intervene in a problem and it can make it much better. However, if you go back to the way you've been using your body in your daily life, things will go back to that initial way they've been, and then so those treatments don't last in the same way as a way of using yourself that's different every day.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And especially, you know, it is those, it's what we do most of the time that
right.
sets us up for stuff, you know, and it's how we move through the world. So being able to give your
exactly.
brain support to learn different ways of being and moving in the world is huge.
Exactly.
And yeah. you got into a little bit the unlearning and undoing.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, I'm a big fan of an advocate for Alexander Technique. I don't teach it, but I receive it. I receive lessons. And to me, it almost feels like learning how to trust fall into my own support. And that makes me think, because I'm a Rolfing practitioner and I'm a fashion nerd, it makes me think about tensegrity. So can we dive into tensegrity land for a little bit?
Yeah.
And how that might relate to, like, what if Alexander Technique's trying to undo and take things away, what is left when you undo? What is the, what is your support?
Yeah. 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 Well, we're, you know, a nation of doers, and
indeed.
We don't have a lot of practice undoing without utter collapse. So most people are going from holding themselves up, pushing through their days and striving to get it all right, to collapsing, dropping all the energy, being drained. And the Alexander practice is about that dynamic middle where our postural tone is lively, not contracted. Our thinking is expansive, not narrow. Breath is effortless, not rigidly controlled. And a tensegrity structure is a great model, as mechanical models go, because it shows this dynamic tension or liveliness. It shows the just right amount of tone, right? Tension and integrity. And because tension is such a word that's usually assumed to be a bad thing, I often use the word tone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not too much, not too little. We're coming into that just right spot with our muscle suit, or actually the whole tissue suit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, most of people, we can point to parts of ourselves that are working too hard, and maybe right. even parts of ourselves that are not working enough. Although often people don't realize their tense or holding until something's been undone. But the system gets so used to this pattern of compression and fixing and holding that sensation gets blunted. That's one reason why constructive rest is such a great practice. You start tuning into your own proprioceptive sensations, those internal sensations that are often outside of conscious awareness, which is easier when you're lying down, focusing on that gentle awareness of what's happening within yourself. Ideally, of course, in this attention training, you're also stepping out of the mind chatter, and the whole nervous system is quieting
yeah.
down, going back, giving us a space to return to balance. You know, that's in including the thoughts, the breath, the musculature, the emotions. I got away from tensegrity.
No, good job of explaining tensegrity too. That
okay.
You know, that balance point of just the right amount of tone.
Yeah.
I'm reaching in my brain for like a good tangible world example, and I'm coming up with one that's really not particularly good, but I'll say it anyway because it's better than nothing. And I just came from the playground with my son because we do before school playground time. So if you're walking across a seesaw, you know, it's a balance point, right? So like you're on one
yeah.
side or the other, and it's just going to clunk down. There's either collapse or excess tension where the seesaw is maybe up on one end or collapsed on the other end. But if you can find that sweet spot in the middle and you stand on that part where it's effortless to stand there and you don't feel like you're wobbling, it's just you find the balance point.
Yeah, and that's lovely.
We have that in an infinitely complex way inside of our bodies with a gajillion different seesaws, but they all
right.
work together. So if you can find the sweet spot, it's easier for everything to find its sweet spot.
Right. And a lot of body work, I guess, works with, you know, this part or that part. And just what you were saying is how that we're infinitely complex, and we don't really need to think about, let's see, what's my ankle doing, and what's going on with my glutes, and how is my shoulder, you know, there's this idea in Alexander about the whole system working with certain principles of ease and expansion, and the head neck back relationship being the primary kind of engine for the limbs to be moving in the world. And that's not to say we don't, you know, sometimes need to look at the anatomy of the feet, for instance, and what is going on with those toes and specific things. But I think our culture, we tend to be much more specialized and, you know, zeroing in on this is where it hurts, as opposed to finding this overall sense of balance where things can really, the body's intelligence or the nervous system can come back to homeostasis, or all the different ways that all of our us different practitioners talk about this. But it is this idea of the whole system working together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And getting away from some of that parts based, I'm going to work on my glutes now, you know, because it's really, yeah, in reality, we can't ever, nothing is ever one thing. We cannot, hopefully, you know, unless somebody has a scalpel and bad intentions, we cannot separate these things in our bodies.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, maybe it's a good idea to find out where your glutes are and what they feel like when they're working, so that when you're, you know, doing your yoga practice, you can sense them, mm-hmm, right? Here they're working or here they're not working. So I don't want to diss the specificity work, which is fascinating. And I think that's when we say body nerds, I think that's what we're talking about, is all that precise layering and anatomy that we get so fascinated with.
Yeah. And you had mentioned this ideal relationship that Alexander places a lot of, the technique places a lot of emphasis on establishing that ideal relationship between the head and the neck and the back. So can you say a little bit more about what that means or what that might look like for people and their bodies?
Yes. We emphasize a dynamic relationship between head, neck, and torso, not a fixed relationship. Most people have a slightly pulled down head, and if that's pointed out to them, they'll lift their face upwards, which actually pulls the skull down more in the back. That back area of the head and the top of the neck is the first area to contract when we go into the startle pattern. And the startle pattern is a human instinct, thank goodness. It prepares us for fight or flight. But we go into mini startle patterns many times a day, whether it's from driving a car in traffic, hearing an upsetting news report, loud noises, deadlines, challenging demands from work or family, and even from our own internal anxiety. So this means a lot of tightening is going on at the base of our skull, a lot of preparation for battle or fleeing, or unfortunately usually freezing. So the tension is traveling down the neck into the shoulders, and that's when we're getting tight and achy there. The pulling down of the head into the shoulders is also putting pressure onto the spine, compressing the vertebrae onto those lovely spongy discs, which get less spongy with all this compression. So this is a pattern of use we see all the time. I mean, it's the norm. So by consciously releasing the neck muscles in the neck, the head becomes more free to balance delicately, gently on top of the spine, which allows the spine to open back up into length, which gives space for the breath to move more freely, which allows the fear reflex to unwind. So that's in theory. You let your head go up and your spine lengthen. In Alexander practice, one comes to lessons to learn to become aware of that excess tension, how to undo or release it, and then how to consciously intend rather than push the spine into length, the torso widen, the breath softening, the systems to quiet. It's this clarity of intention rather than a particular muscular movement or place to be that's right or wrong. That's one of the hallmarks of the Alexander work. Ideally, we're teaching how to return the system to how it's made to function with the most balance and fluidity and grace and efficiency. In all vertebrates, from fish to, you know, all the four-legged creatures up to us, when the head releases off the top of the spine and the spine lengthens, then the limbs move. And this pattern of movement is what Alexander called the primary pattern of movement. And it's the most efficient in all vertebrates. We can see it really clearly in wild animals and cats. The four-leggeds, they're going in the direction of their heads, right? So they're releasing their heads and letting their spines lengthen, and then their limbs go. Whereas for us, we're upright, so we actually need to be releasing up first and then letting the limbs go into movement. So simple principles, not easy, but once you get the principles, they can be explored in all situations and in all movements in your life. One more thing, another reason why head, neck, back is emphasized, is kind of a lot of reasons, but it would be that the functioning of the organs, the circulatory system, the nervous system, the lymph system, the brain, the functioning of all of these systems work best in an open, lively, postural state, and particularly the torso. Actors and martial artists think of this as a state of readiness or a state of presence. It's that upright, open quality you see in graceful posture or beautiful movement. And in the internal sense, it's a feeling of being integrated with the parts of you connected.
Yeah, and I love that you pointed out that it's not about getting people to get it right, you know, to conform to a certain shape. It's about exploring potential,
right,
and creating potential from the inside out.
Right, absolutely. The thing about good posture is just it's just an awful thing in our society. I guess it's been going on for a long time, this idea of lift your chest and pull your shoulders back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you should stand. And then there's the tucking and the lifting and, it makes things worse to up too straight, you know, like this idea that you should be straight. So they're both really bad, and we just have to really be clear that language is no longer helpful, and we need to find other language to help people come into balance, be upright, but not holding.
Yeah.
Fixing.
No, I mean, that's such a good illustration of the undoing, you know, and unlearning. And some of what we have to unlearn are these ideas we've been given by people who don't have an understanding of the human body. You know, maybe our parents who want us to look good when we're going off to school or sitting in the class, or teachers, or, you know, people who just had this idea handed down, this faulty idea about what good posture is. And I see tons of trouble from this kind of bullying of ourselves that we learn at a really young age, the suck it in, tuck it in, pull it back, pull it down, you know, all that stuff.
Right. Everyone is trying so hard to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just have to give up, because it's an unsustainable thing for your body.
Yeah.
It just doesn't really work.
So they only experience effort or collapse. And Alexander Technique is one of the things that allows people to experience an alternative to those two extremes. Yeah.
Exactly.
So how did you get into the field?
I came from dance. actually for artistic reasons. I was dancing with a modern company, but I was ballet trained and my movement habits were deeply ingrained, really rigid. Like most dancers, I was taught strength and correctness at the expense of free flow and expression. So I immediately noticed a big difference in the way of my movement, even in just a few lessons. And then I just became hooked.
And what were some of the, you know, I know you went for performance reasons or dance reasons, and were there any surprising benefits to you when you began receiving the lessons?
You know, I'm not sure that I knew it was supposed to help my back pain.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew I needed to soften my torso, loosen my muscles, free up my joints. So experiencing less back pain every time I did constructive rest, every time I had a lesson, was huge. And just coming to that gradual awareness that type A way of being in the world was a choice, and that I didn't really need to do that. I was fairly pushy and driven, competitive and over-efforting, and I'd had a lot of success in my life doing that. But I just became curious about ease and about poise, about being responsive rather than reactive, and about enjoyment of movement.
Yeah, and you actually, speaking of enjoyment of movement, I know you've run a few workshops that are about pleasure, you know, moving with pleasure, or even about sexuality and like what makes for good sex versus meh kind of sex, you know?
Right.
And so we have an interesting relationship to pleasure in our culture too. We have this kind of binge and purge relationship
yeah.
to pleasure, I think. So can you say a little bit more about the interest or emphasis on pleasure?
Yeah, well, culturally, I think there's so much fear and distraction and an emphasis on speed and striving and pushing. And coming back to a quiet self, just being, and being kind to oneself is so needed and so pleasurable. But it's so often thought of as a luxury. A lot of times in lessons, I think that the most important thing that's happening for my students is that before they can work with the skills of movement and the skills of awareness, inhibition, and direction, they have to come back to themselves in a fuller way. And an Alexander lesson is often a pleasurable feeling, right? We have these pleasurable sensations of undoing. It's kind of my edge, you know, going from being really pushy and outward focused, competitive, into how I can experience the world in a nicer way. It's where I've been working. So that's why I'm interested, I think. And I think my idea with just coming right out about that it's pleasurable to inhabit ourselves fully is a way to get people thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
That movement can be good for you and yummy at the same time.
Yeah, it's funny that we have gotten so far away from it that we all need that reminder, because I think most of us do.
Yeah. I mean, culturally, we are just so, I mean, we're so busy, right? We're striving to get things done and to do it right and to live up to potential. And there's so much emphasis on the external. And I mean, we have a lot of people who are interested in mindfulness now, and that it just needs to keep seeping in. And the idea of being kind to oneself, I see it more and more in little bits here and there. But that is helpful for healing, right? For coming out of pain, for the body to do its good work is just kind to oneself is important.
Yeah, I'll look for it for the show notes for this episode. But I think there was a study that came out, because we love studies, and it was about, it was also about something else we love, like who has the most successful, what is a marker of a successful life? Because we all want to be successful. Mm. And one of the things that, the thing I think that it said is the best marker is self-compassion.
Mm.
So not
interesting
grades or charisma or money or any of those things, you know, that we think of, going to really good schools or whatever, self-compassion, you know. So yeah. Obviously they also took a pretty thoughtful approach to what, how do we define the word successful?
Right.
I applaud them for, but yeah, I'll look for that because I thought it was interesting.
Right. You always hear the kind of quote or this idea that when people are dying, and are there things that people, you know, what do they feel good about? What do they not feel good about? They never wish that they worked more.
Mm-hmm.
They always wanted to spend more time with loved ones. And so that's the other thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And then about sex.
Yeah, sure.
So what happens when we become less orgasm focused? Not that there's anything wrong with orgasms. I'm all for them. But what about sensation in other places as well, right? And what's it like to explore sensations, for instance, in one's own fingertips when touching someone? To allow one's own wrist to be free of tension and to enjoy that movement while you're touching. And from a receiver perspective, same thing. What's it like to just bring some awareness to other parts and maybe not contract right away as one gets aroused, but decontract and let that sensation become diffuse? It's just kind of another way to explore and to have a different kind of pleasure.
Mm-hmm, yeah. It turns on more receptors.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I think that, the idea that we're supposed to, right? We're supposed to give our partner this kind of thing, and we're supposed to be able to have an orgasm in this amount of time, you know, because if not, they're going to get tired, like whatever it is, all the stuff that we have about, or we have to have an orgasm or there's so much cultural stuff that goes along with sex. And it includes, I think, the distraction thing, that we're so distracted. It's really hard for people to be present with themselves, let alone with another person.
Yeah, and intimately with another person, it brings that stuff up for sure.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned on your website, you know, one more thing I want to get into, because I think it's a good point. Like you had asked at one point, well, why don't more people know about Alexander technique? And my world is all about bringing attention to all of the range of manual movement therapies. And this is the constant question. Why don't more people know about this stuff?
Mm.
So in response to Alexander technique, you kept hearing from people, well, people don't want to take the responsibility that the technique requires, but you don't really buy it. So can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Well, the Alexander technique is kind of the grandfather of the somatic methods, right? It's been around for over 100 years. It's such a profoundly transformative method that it still confounds those of us who love it why it's not more known and practiced. Because clearly we need it. It is a paradigm shift away from our typical cultural mode of doing. And it does require a certain openness and willingness to let go of preconceived ideas and personal exploration. And a teacher is really a facilitator or a guide, like a meditation teacher. And the student actually has to do the practice to get any benefit. And I think that's probably true of a lot of these modalities that are coming up and that people are kind of inventing and that come out of this kind of work, or people just come up with them out of their own experience, right? And I think a lot of people will be willing to do the practice if they knew they were going to benefit so much. Maybe we don't communicate the benefits clearly. I'm not sure. I mean, people mostly think about the Alexander technique as about posture. And it turns out that the postural and movement principles are so different than the usual alignment and strengthening models that it shouldn't necessarily be grouped with body-based models. Mm-hmm. But then again, there's all these other body-based models that are now, like all the work that you're doing and exploring, is so people are coming to it from wanting to get out of pain. And the systems are going against the traditional Western medical model. So I think that's been a problem. But I think that is slowly changing. There's a lot of doctors and research, not a lot. There's some research going on about how the body works as a whole and how all the systems together need to be coordinated, and it needs to be more of an integrated team of practitioners instead of, you know, one person, one physical therapist fixing your shoulder, for instance. And I think that actually the physical therapy world is doing some amazing work. And there's like this huge continuum from somebody who's giving you three exercises and sending you home to people who are really working with all the different layering and very gentle, mindful movements. It's just, there's a continuum with all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But I find that the students who most take to the Alexander work are so excited to find out how this work that they came to feel better from their pain or be able to do, you know, play their violin better or whatever it is, are so excited that the work is actually pervading all of aspects of being human, mm-hmm. of aspects of being able to respond with choice to everything that one explores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Like
I guess I just still don't know. Do you have any ideas about?
I think about it a lot, and I think that on a very deep level, our culture just does not understand holism. And I say that from a place, I'm somebody who's had a career in that field for many years now. And yet, even though I've been in practice for 14 years, more than that, I'm a product of this culture for almost 40 years. And yes. I don't understand holism. And it's mm-hmm. my field. Like I seek understanding it. I understand it better than probably a lot of people in the culture because it's what I do for work. But I just think we have this pretty intense cultural veil on what that even means, and then add to the fact that word has been turned into this kind of yucky buzzword, mm-hmm. that it even means less, you know. Holistic means kind of woo, I don't know, different than normal. What? Like, no, that's not what it means. So yeah. I think that it's just I think we're in the process personally of a long, slow evolution as humans to understanding what that means. I think it's going to take a really long time. I think our fields are helping that to happen in a pretty big and exciting way. But we just don't get it because we live in a world where everything is separated out.
Yeah. Well, that's beautifully said. I think that the idea of holism and the undivided self, I love this term. There's a book, an Alexander book called The Undivided Self. Unfortunately, it's quite dense and hard to get through. But the title is so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it may be that if we stop saying mind, body, this, mind, body, spirit, that, you know, I mean, I think language our language does shape our culture, right? It does shape our understanding. So if we keep saying mind, body, how do we experience the self? You know, and how do we experience our choices for self-care, for instance? Mm-hmm. I'm absolutely somebody who will go still. You know, I teach Alexander lessons. I've got to go run over to the city and teach more lessons. You know, self-care for me is still a challenge. I still have to remind myself. I still catch myself saying, why am I tired? I shouldn't be tired.
Yeah.
Well,
you and me both.
Yeah. You know, that's not the way I would talk to my good friend. Right.
Right.
So I really, the self-care and the kindness to self, it's really big mm-hmm. in there, along with this separation of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things you're playing with in your own practice these days?
Well, living here in Provincetown, at the tip of Cape Cod, I'm surrounded by water. Mm. The tide is coming in as we speak. And I'm really inspired by water and moving in the water. I love to get on my noodles and move around in different ways that are very buoyant, right, in the water, mm. or even without the noodles. And then to bring some of that buoyancy and fluidity into my movement on land, to let that influence me. And I love that you say, what are you playing with? Because we call the Alexander work the work, but it's really the exploration or the play or the discoveries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I still ask myself that classic question all the time. What would it be like to do X activity with more ease?
Mm-hmm.
What would it be like to bicycle into town to my little, to get my groceries with even more ease? And then all of a sudden my body knows how to do that. It knows how to soften and open and enjoy and just slow down a little bit maybe. But even not slowing, even going fast, but with ease.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I'm going to be using that phrase a lot for everything.
Yeah, everything.
I always ask that, like when you're typing, how could I do this with a little more ease? Could I pour this glass of water with a little more ease? Because I am also a type A person who is teaching what I need to learn.
Exactly. And I do think sometimes I go to Alexander conferences and there's all these, I don't know, the people, I get judgy and and then I realize, no, we're all here because this is what we needed the most.
Yeah.
This quality of being that is less like rigid and holding and perfectionist and judgy and all those things, we needed to come to ourselves in a different way. And so here we are, all colleagues.
Indeed. Well, thank you so much, Constance. I so enjoyed talking with you and I really appreciate you talking with all of us.
Thank you so much, Brooke. And I also want to say that, you know, what we were talking about, why don't people know more about this kind of work? You're doing an amazing thing in the world by your podcast here. It's just so lovely. And your Liberated Body Challenge, which bringing so many things into the conversations. So I really, really appreciate the work you're doing. It's just wonderful.
Thank you. I feel really, really lucky to be doing it.
Yeah, good, good. Enjoy.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you.
So big gratitude again to Constance for talking with all of us today. You can read more about Constance and also find her practice and a bunch of free resources that she has at constanceclaire.com. All of the show notes, including her website, any resources we mentioned, and I'm also going to link to a good study that was pretty amazing in showing how helpful Alexander is for back pain in particular. That's always at liberatedbody.com. And the home play for this week. who better to take you through home play about Alexander Technique than an actual Alexander Technique teacher? So Constance has some great resources on her website, some of which she has curated as a grouping of one-minute practices. And there's one in particular I'm going to link to in the show notes under the home play section called Standing into Length. I think that it is a beautiful, simple 1 minute. Again, so it's hard to argue with not having enough time for it. And it's a nice experience of what Alexander is like and also getting a real feel for this relaxing into expansion as opposed to forcing yourself into uprightness or perfect posture, all that stand up straight stuff. So I'm going to let her take you through it via this practice that I will link to on Liberated Body. But basically, you're going to get she's going to take you through feeling your feet resting on the ground, ankles, knees, hips, not being locked anywhere, and bringing your attention to your head and neck joint. So the top of your spine, which is way up high between the ears. And I actually like to stick my fingers in my ears and remind myself that that's the top of my spine, which is something I got into the habit of doing after learning about that with my Alexander teacher here in New Haven. And getting a feel for your spine as your central axis of support and all those tiny muscles close to your spine as your core muscles that you don't need to get to work. You don't need to pull yourself up, that they can actually do their thing by you releasing a bit. So it's a really beautiful practice. Again, it's on constanceclaire.com and it's Standing into Length. And I will link to that. Thank you to all who've been in touch this week, either via email, and you can always find me at brooke@liberatedbody.com, or by iTunes reviews, Facebook, Twitter. And hey, now, if you want to leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher, that would be divine, as it helps other people to find the podcast. And if you're looking for where we're hanging out in other digital spheres on Twitter, I'm Brooke Thomas. And on Facebook, I'm still in the midst of duking it out with them about changing the name. So I am now both Fascia Freedom Fighters and Liberated Body, and I'm working on merging those pages. Anywho, enough web addresses. This week, I am very grateful to the kind words of Peter Peterson, Laura Rossi, Kelly Lockett, and of course, last but certainly not least, all the 30-day challengers who just wrapped up their 30 days for the month of September of exploring their inner and outer spaces. Congratulations, you guys, and thank you so much for being such a smart, funny, thoughtful, supportive group. I feel crazy lucky. I'll be back next Liberated Tuesday. And until then, keep on making the world a more embodied place.